everybody. Welcome to The Athletic Support, your podcast on the Montreal Canadiens. I am Marc-Antoine Godin with Arpin Basu, as usual. Hello, Arpin. How are you?
Hello, Marc-Antoine.
How are you, my friend?
I'm ragged.
I know.
My God, the Canadiens preseason hype video was Baby, I'm Coming Home. Well, come home already. Yeah. Come back to the Eastern time zone, please. I'm begging you.
Yeah, it's tough.
But yeah, otherwise I'm great.
I know. Usually, I mean, when we cover games on the West Coast, we're there. So it's not,
right.
You know, we don't have to work until 4 o'clock in the morning. It's nice to have you, Arpin. I want to just quickly mention the fact that I've asked on Twitter some of our listeners to just send some suggestions on things that we could do to improve our podcast, and we listen to you, and there's going to be some tweaks, some improvements to the pod as we go on. We'll be happy to share these things with you. I want to say that there's going to be a new segment, two new segments on the pod today. The first one is called the Heritage Minute. So basically, you know how we always discuss the Montreal Canadiens, but this year with the All-Canadian Division, there's a lot of things that are happening in other Canadian cities, and potentially it may affect the Canadiens. So we're going to each, Arpin and I are going to each identify one thing from the other Canadian teams that was of interest to us in the last week, and disclose it in what we call the Heritage Minute. So that's one. And also we've got a voicemail, Arpin. A new voicemail.
Yeah, we have this new voicemail thing. So I'm pretty excited about this. So what we will do is invite listeners to send in an audio clip, a question, a comment, whatever you kind of want. Keep it clean, obviously. And you can either send that in via email at, we have our own email address, and it's bilingual. It's baladohabspod. So balado, B-A-L-A-D-O, habspod at gmail.com. Or you can even phone it in like a traditional voicemail at 424-703-3859. And what we'll do every week, we'll check out some of your voicemails and pick a few to play on the show, so you'll get to hear your own voice. And then Marc-Antoine and I will banter about it a little bit.
Yeah. So that's going to be fun. So today, listen, the Canadiens have had a surprising start. Obviously, we'll have a lot to unpack there. Mainly, it's a fun team to watch. It's probably a lot more fun than in previous years, and I think that will be worth discussing.
It's a lot more fun than in Vancouver too.
Oh my. Yes. I know. On to that in a minute. The Joel Armia injury, he suffered a concussion after the Tyler Myers hit. We'll discuss that. I mean, what it means for the Canadiens to lose Armia. I mean, he was just finding his game. It's got also cap implications for the Canadiens to lose injured players. But before we get to this, we've got a guest on our pod today, and it's no other than our Vancouver colleague and writer at The Athletic, Thomas Drance. Hello, Thomas.
Gentlemen, thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here, Thomas. I miss you so much.
I miss you too, man.
Yeah, to our listeners, Thomas and I were essentially brothers for a month in Edmonton during the final two rounds of the Stanley Cup playoffs last season, which already feels like 3 years ago.
But Thomas
spent the entirety of the playoffs in Edmonton covering it for The Athletic and doing an excellent job. I got to ride shotgun with him for the last month. But this is the first time we've spoken since then, pretty much,
wow.
I think.
Yeah, well, yeah, so. it was like a, Homer, Mr. Burns in the cabin during the avalanche situation. Like, by the end of it, it was like, now let's never speak again. Like,
yeah, that's right. We completely overdosed on each other.
Yeah, especially because by the time you showed up, I was truly in, like, Colonel Kurtz mode, right? Like, I truly lost it. It was my heart of darkness. And so, you were very much in the Sheen role, showing up and just being like, this guy might
get
be
out of
brilliant,
here.
But he's insane. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, no. I was just like, get the hell out of town for a couple of days, man. You need a break. So
that helped.
But anyhow, so now here you are back to in crisis management mode.
Yes,
in Vancouver.
Indeed.
So, yeah. I'm interested. we'd both be interested to hear, before getting to the Vancouver situation, we'd both be interested in hearing your assessment of the Canadiens after these two games. And generally in the season, I think, you know, we often, we're a bit of an echo chamber here in Montreal as well. I think it'd be interesting to get your take on how this team looks so far.
Yeah, you know, I'll be honest with you. I haven't seen the Canadiens that I expected or that I think we saw in Edmonton in these first two games in Vancouver. Like, I don't know that Montreal has been at their best by any means. It's just that Vancouver's been so bad. And, of course, Tyler Toffoli has begun to, you know, stalk Vancouverites' dreams like some goal-scoring Freddy Krueger. The thing I expect from the Montreal Canadiens as the year goes along anyway, right? Like, as they become familiar, is to be a team that can really grind out a lot of like 3-2 wins, right? Especially in a Canadian division where, structurally speaking, I think a lot of the other teams are compromised and the Habs are deep and really disciplined about the way they play, not in terms of, you know, the
penalties. Not the penalties. No, that's for sure.
They do need to play a little less heavy against this Canucks team. I think they've, you know, especially in that first game, I think they kind of kept them in it just because they were sort of trying to play that classic heavy Claude Julien hockey. And I don't think that's the way to beat the Canucks, right? Like, the St. Louis Blues tried that in the playoffs. Vegas obviously tried that in the playoffs. That kind of plays into a Canucks team that has, you know, tends to have like speed and a lethal power play. Like, they like, I think, when a team comes in and tries to rough them up, because it generally works for them, right? Like, that's right. I kind of have looked at this Canadian division and thought Toronto's the toughest matchup for Vancouver, because Toronto does what Vancouver does, but better, right? But a lot better. And Montreal is sort of the one of the matchups that I think favors the Canucks. Not actually, as we saw last night, right? Like, I think the Habs are the better team, but just as a stylistic fit, especially because, you know, if there's sort of one thing that concerns me about this Habs club, it is going to be that speed on the back end, which is why I think the emergence of Romanov is such a big deal. But what I'm seeing from the Habs is just a ton of depth. And while we didn't see it in the first two games they've played out west, I do think their ability to control games and shut things down defensively, which we finally saw. Like, we finally saw it in the second period last night, as the Habs just crushed the Canucks. The Canucks didn't have an even strength shot. You know, that's sort of the types of things I think this Habs team's going to be able to do to some of their Canadian opponents. I think we saw that in Edmonton. I don't think we've really seen it a ton to this point in a pretty high scoring series out in Vancouver, but we did see it in the second period. And, you know, when it combines with how the Canucks played, which was, you know, absolutely awful, right? Truly an embarrassment for the club.
Mike Antoine, you know, used the word unacceptable.
Ugly. Yeah, it was unacceptable.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, one thing that's hard to escape, like, I watched all those games in the Edmonton bubble, Arpon, and at no point did it feel like it was all so weird. You know what I mean? It was like the whole league is here in Edmonton for a summer of hockey. Like, the whole thing was so ridiculous that it never felt ghoulish or ghostly to me. It just felt weird. Like, it was just like, well, this is a weird time in my life, you know, like, whatever. You kind of rolled with it. Now, seeing games in this empty Rogers Arena, like the building that's part of my routine, you know, it's like more familiar and for that reason, more disturbing almost. Right. And, you know, to think about how that building would have sounded, for example, on, you know, Wednesday night, right? Like, it's a 50-50 partisan split in Vancouver when the Habs roll into town, as it so often is when the Habs roll into any marketplace. You know, to think of, like, the thing about after Toffoli scored the hat trick goal to give them a late lead, right? You know, you would have heard all those Habs fans, you would have seen people like pointing to their jerseys and beaking to people around them, right? And then you would have seen the exact opposite 10 seconds later when Brock Besser scores. Like, missing that, I really missed it. But last night, the fact that it was an empty building, I think that helps the Canucks. Like, I think that would have gotten ugly last night. And as it should have, because that was a truly awful performance from Vancouver.
But it's interesting, though, that if I can summarize. So basically, you're thinking that the Canadians are going to regress to the means when it comes to their offense, but also their defense, that they're going to tighten it up and come back to their brand, to their identity, which I find interesting. But you said also that you think that the Canucks are a good fit in terms of style to beat the Canadians down the road this season. Whereas we've discussed that, Arpin and I, on the podcast before, and we were of the opinion that because of the fact that the Canucks were top heavy in terms of talent, and they were not necessarily the deepest team. You look at their third line, their fourth line, it's not, and even on the back end, I mean, their depth is tested right now. The fact that the Canadians can roll those four lines, they can roll their three pairs on D, it makes a matchup that's in a grinding situation, in a war of attrition, they're well positioned to face the Canucks as they are against another top heavy team that is the Edmonton Oilers.
Yeah, I just think the Canucks are a little bit different than the Oilers, because the Oilers are a little more disciplined defensively, which is a problem because the Habs are more disciplined defensively, right? So it's like their strengths match, even though you see McDavid, Dreisaitl, and Pettersson and company here, and sort of think of them as similarly. In terms of the actual strengths of the team, I think Edmonton's, defensive with a really good power play and an absolute game breaker, the best in the league. Whereas the Canucks, even their depth players, like even Vertanen and Gaudette, players that, don't control play well, don't necessarily match up with Kotkaniemi, Tyler Toffoli line all that well. Are one-shot scorers, right? Like the Canucks are just more offensive all around and more permissive defensively all around too than the Oilers are. And as such, especially with that power play and especially with the way that the Canadians like to play heavy and assert themselves, I just think the overall ability that the Canucks have to make people pay on the power play and to put older defenders, slower defenders in the spin cycle, especially when the lotto line shows up. And I think we saw that in the first game of this miniseries fairly regularly. I think about even the Canucks' first goal where Weber and Sherrod get stuck out there for an extended shift, take a penalty, Bo Horvat scores, right? Like that's sort of the template.
We saw in the first period last night too.
Yeah. So that's sort of the template that the Canucks can use to annoy, punish, hang around with sort of teams like the Habs. The Habs just to me mirror some of the teams that the Canucks have had success with. I sort of see the Habs as kind of like a low-end version of last year's Philadelphia Flyers. You have to be on your game. They're workmanlike and competent, but they may struggle against teams with that really sick top end, which is why, I think Toronto, for example, I think Toronto and Montreal are the two best teams in Canada, but I think Montreal will always have a handful or have their hands full with Toronto just because of that speed and their sort of offensive calibration. So, it's interesting. I may be wrong, but that's sort of just how I view it in terms of Montreal's strengths and how they match up with Vancouver. That said, right now anyway, with how the Canucks are going, and there's a lot of problems, right? Like the gearbox has basically fallen out of Vancouver's top line. Elias Pettersson, just hasn't played well. It's inexplicable. The six games that he's had, just because, we know that he's one of the best centermen in hockey, like one of the most dynamic two-way and offensive forces in the league. He's one of 13 players who's scored at 0.9 points per game in their first two seasons in the league in the last 25 years. And that, the lists on the names on that list are Forsberg, Kariya, Crosby, McDavid, Malkin, Backstrom, right? Like there's no Pettersson, Matthews, the names are almost like Hall of Fame or all-star caliber or superstar caliber players across the board. Like the only exception is Paul Stastny. And he's going to, finish his career with over 1,000 games and 800 points. Like, we know that Pettersson is a player of consequence, but through six games, like there's just nothing happening for him. He's got one assist. He's 43% Corsi 4 after being like a 55% guy last year. Like there's just not a lot there.
And he's not even a threat. I mean,
he doesn't have the puck. No. He doesn't have the puck. And Pettersson always has the puck. It's crazy. Yeah. Like I've honestly rarely seen anything like this from an exceptional player. And when you combine like a compromised top line, goaltending that's no longer elite, right? You pretty much undermine the reason that the Canucks were able to overachieve last season, right? Elite top line, elite goaltending, have those sort of paper over some depth issues and defensive issues and then really good special teams. I think the Canucks will have decent special teams again, but if their top line can't get going, if their goaltending isn't even average and it hasn't been to this point against the Habs anyway, that's it. Like they're dead in the water. They can't overcome it because of the depth issues that you gentlemen both identified.
And the thing is that, you know, the Canucks have played 11% of their season. You know, like, I mean, that's,
yeah, no, I know.
Like everyone, right. You know, talking about six games and being, and like, you know, overreacting to six games. I don't think that it is an overreaction after six games because a significant chunk of the season is over. So,
yeah.
So there's that, but I would be interested, I think, and I think Canadians, our listeners would be very interested in hearing, you know, you mentioned it briefly, the Freddy Krueger, like return of Tyler Toffoli, but you know, how the fact that Canucks were unable to extend a contract offer to him, or unwilling, unwilling to do the other things necessary to make him a contract offer. How did that play out in Vancouver? And obviously, you know, I don't think you need to go too much into how it's playing out now, but I mean, it's you know, like how did...
Not good.
Not great. Not great, Bob.
What was the general sense in Vancouver when it became clear that Toffoli wasn't coming back?
Yeah, so the Toffoli one was fascinating when it dropped on Thanksgiving Day, because to that point in the offseason, every single unrestricted free agent had departed, right? And so Markstrom leaves on a six-year, $6 million deal that has almost no analogy considering his career track record in the goalie market, right? Like that was a new market setting deal, full no movement clause, you know, signing bonus structure in his age 35 and 36 seasons that make a buyout prohibitive and guarantee 80% of his salary. People saw that deal and were like, okay, you know, Jacob Markstrom's amazing, but that's something that we probably would have criticized management for doing, right? same for Tanev and a similar reaction. Troy Stetcher, you know, that was just a sad one. Like Troy Stetcher was a hometown guy willing to take less to stay, fan favorite. Like that one's just sad. That one should have worked for all sides. And I think just miscommunication and on sort of got in the way there. But when Toffoli signed at 4.25 times four, like that was a deal every team in the league should have signed, right? Like that was a deal that I think for the fan base anyway, everyone sort of looked at
that. That was the best offer he got.
I know.
That's the crazy part about it is that's the best offer he got.
Because it's, I mean, you know, Toffoli, and you've seen it too with the passing, right? Like it's not just the shooting. It's not just the volume shot. It's not just the intelligence. It's not just the play driving. It is, you know, the passing. Like he's a really good playmaker off the wing. He's lethal down low on the power play. But, you know, you also can see some of the speed concerns that I think, you know, did make some teams look at a 4-year deal, like a deal of that length, as a little bit risky, just because, you know, he's not the best skater. I think he's aware he's not the best skater. And in a league that gets faster and faster every year, if you play along the wall, right, like that adds some risk to your projection. But for me, 4 years for Tyler Toffoli, like that's a deal I do every day. That guy's way too smart. Way too polished, way too professional, way too experienced to fall completely off a cliff by the time he's 31 for me. So that was a deal that the Vancouver fan base anyway looked at and thought, man, that's a deal we have to do all day. We just gave up a second and a top prospect, like a Hobie Baker nominee for this guy. And, you know, honestly, at the end of the day, I think Canucks management didn't regard it too differently, to be totally honest with you. Like, I think they didn't rate Stetcher the way that the market did. I think they saw Markstrom, you know, the Markstrom deal was too much, too long for a guy when they were really high on Thatcher Demko and certainly didn't want to give an NMC to a goalie ahead of expansion. Right. You know, I think they saw Tanev as too much too long as well. But the Toffoli deal, I think they thought, you know, that was one that got away. You know, that was one that would have helped us. And they weren't able to do it.
It just seems to me like it brings to light an anxiety that Canucks fans have already in the Jay Beagle contract or like the Sutter contract, like these, you know, the Roussel contract, like these things become amplified when you're unable to make a decent offer to a guy who showed such good chemistry and immediate results in Vancouver.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it was almost directly compounded because to have the space, like another dynamic that we weren't aware of when Toffoli signed was that the Canucks basically had the Schmidt deal in hand. They just needed to wait for Pietrangelo to decide to sign in Vegas, right? So right. Management wasn't going to commit that cap space until they'd made the Schmidt deal. And that happened a few hours after Toffoli signed in Montreal. But the Canucks could have had the flexibility to make Toffoli an offer if they'd been able to buy out a contract, most likely Brandon Sutter, right? Like you right. can fit Toffoli's cap hit onto this roster really easily if you buy out Sutter and either trade or don't qualify Jake for Tannen. And the Canucks just didn't have the financial resources to do so. You know, I thought it was really interesting earlier this week. Canucks head coach Travis Green, who's waiting on an extension for budget related reasons out here, was asked what was so good about Montreal. And he said, oh, they had a great offseason. They have a lot of depth. They're fast. They spent a lot of money. And it was just like a checklist of what his club hadn't done.
Right.
You know,
it was a memo to the Aquilini family.
Yeah, I mean, that's it wasn't hard to read it that way, whether it was intended that way or not. Right. And so, you know, that came home to roost. Like that inefficient spending in the bottom six didn't just come home to roost conceptually where Toffoli is concerned, but probably pretty directly, especially in the fact that the club wasn't able to or wasn't greenlit to buy out deals like Sutter and Berchi, which would have helped them, you know, afford four and a half for a guy that, you know, internally at least it was recognized was almost a hand in glove fit with Elias Pettersson. And look, Toffoli last night, 7-3 game, point blank chance on the power play. Demko stones him, right? Finally, someone makes a save off Tyler Toffoli. And Toffoli looks to the heavens and just goes, fuck! Like, fuck! and like, so, you know, I mean, there's no... Yeah,
he wanted
there's
that,
no,
he wanted he was that only, hat trick, man.
Yeah, there's no he was only here for 2 weeks. It's not a big deal. Move on. Like, this guy wanted to rip his former team's heart out. You know, and I think that also speaks volumes about the communication and how last summer played out. It can't not. Everyone wants the two hat tricks in a row. It's a great story, but there was more there to be that upset about a save at that stage of the game. And obviously and clearly, and, yeah, I mean, it's a regrettable one from a Canucks perspective.
There's no Canadian players that has two hat tricks in a row since Claude Laroe's in 1974. So it's been a while. So it would have been quite nice to see Toffoli doing that against his former team. But you mentioned that
he can still average a hat trick for the miniseries. He just needs four on Saturday. I think he'll do it.
He has a chance.
I say he does it, as the great James Morrill said.
Yes. But, I mean, you mentioned the fact that they the Canucks didn't have the resources to pay him, but I think that it's not just a cap hit. It's also the fact that the Canadiens offered him a four-year deal, and on the market, you know, if we ignore the dollar amount, he did not receive any other offer of that length. I mean, it was all one-year deals, two-year deals. The Canadiens came up with a four-year deal. So, you know, if the Canucks had chosen to trade some of that, you know, I decided to lower the cap hit a little bit and find something that was manageable for them in exchange for an extra year, maybe it could have worked. But Toffoli came to Montreal basically because there was nothing else out there that was remotely attractive to him.
Well, and including the Canucks, right? Like, I don't think there was early optimism in the process in about mid-September. I think the Canucks were very much gung-ho about getting it done. And somewhere along the way, they decided that, you know, the budget was going to be tight and they needed to prioritize their defense. And Toffoli, I don't know that Toffoli got, you know, to the point of even getting an offer. Like, certainly it was quiet, according to all sides, in the weeks and days leading up to and beyond the opening of the market between the Canucks and Toffoli. You know, and that was a pretty common thread for most of the Canucks UFAs, with the exception of Jacob Markstrom. Like, the communication just wasn't there. And, you know, so it's an interesting side note, a footnote, and certainly Toffoli is reminded the club and this fan base that, you know, you may have Nils Höglander, who you're excited about based on his performance at training camp. Maybe he'll be really good. You've got Vasily Podkolzin coming. Great. Like, you know, I'm Tyler Toffoli. Like, there's value in that. And clearly, this has been, you know, and on top of the fact that the Canucks are just coming off of getting beat twice by Jacob Markstrom, right? Once in a shutout, and in the next game, Markstrom got beat twice, but they were both goals that were deflected in, right? Like, they were both like kicked in goals. So no shooter has directly beaten, no Canucks shooter has directly beaten Jacob Markstrom yet. And now Tyler Toffoli comes into Vancouver and is just, you know, laying waste, right? Like, he's gonna, it's like, cool guys don't look at explosions. Tyler Toffoli walking away from the rank at this point. So you know, he's like John Wick, right? It's like, I saw him kill three men in a bar with a pencil. It's getting ridiculous. Yeah. So we'll see how Saturday goes, but this has been some revenge tour from a pretty good
I see him as Henry Hill in Goodfellas, putting all the Molotov cocktails in the cars and running away. Yes. And that screenshot that just freezes with the whole thing exploding behind him as he's running off. So he's got one That's more incredible. Game, and then he gets to run off to Montreal. So we'll see how Vancouver handles him on Saturday. But it's the storyline is just delicious. I know, it's just
absolutely unbelievable. People, you just have to laugh too, right? Like, Canucks fans have a certain strain of fatalism, having not won in 50 years, and all the bad luck that the franchise feels it's endured over the years.
I've always thought Canucks fans were very reasonable people. I don't know. Yeah, what you're
very
about.
Very nice. Yeah. I mean, they're the best. They're just also you know, jackals, and you know, this is like the Markstrom shutout in his first game, like that. That was as predictable as it gets in the annals of Canucks history. But five goals from Tyler Toffoli in two games, you know, that's a twist of the knife that I didn't anticipate, but perhaps I should have.
Before we let you go, Thomas, there was something I wanted to ask you, because amidst all the things that don't work for the Canucks, I mean, Bo Horvat is doing pretty well for himself. He's been very dangerous on the power play. I mean, even last year he had 12 power play goal, so that's pretty good, and he's a threat from that bumper position. But now we're in an environment this year where you know, teams will face each other two times in a row, sometimes three times in a row. So there are obviously adjustments that can be made. If you put yourself in the position of the Canadians, or we could take a flip the argument and take an example that would put you on the other seat, but if you're the Montreal Canadiens and you see Bo Horvat having so much success on their power play, being such a threat, how do you think teams will manage to adjust and neutralize things like a player that dominant on the power play in the age of the miniseries? Can something be fixed so quickly? Can something be adjusted so quickly when it's been working so well for the Canucks?
Well, the key is JT Miller, right? Like, the key is actually, like, Bo Horvat, credit to him, but Bo Horvat has maybe handled the puck for 5 seconds the entire on the power play in this entire series, right? He just has three power play goals. He is a shooter. He is a one-time option from the bumper spot. He's really good at finding those soft areas, but it's JT Miller who's sending those touch passes. And you can see last night, the Canadians adjusted. They had a guy down low, like, they had their winger collapsing so low on Horvat, and you know, the high-low pass from Hughes, and it's a touch pass into Horvat that Horvat one times, you know, it was a split-second window. They basically did everything they could to take it away. The Canucks just managed to, you know, chuck it around the edges well, and JT Miller's a pretty underrated playmaker from that half-wall spot. Like, he's lethal when he's cooking. He's been cooking this week anyway, but it hasn't mattered for a Canucks team that, you know, for whom nothing else is working. The Canucks power play is going to get theirs. Like, they are. They're really good. And that's true even with Pettersson not quite, you know, firing away the way that we're used to. So, you know, I don't know that the Canadians can do much more than they've done. They're an excellent special teams unit. They addressed it last night, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, Horvat still got the goal from the spot that was clearly a point of emphasis for Julian. You could see Julian even from where we were up in the above the 300s. You could see the Canadiens coaching staff was furious after the Horvat goal, power play goal yesterday. And that's not a surprise to me, because they basically had, you know, that power play winger just collapsing so low into that bumper spot, like into the middle of the ice. They'll have to continue to do that, but you know, I don't know how you shut down a power play with as many options as the Canucks have, especially once Pettersson gets going. I mean, the only thing that I'd say is if Pettersson's shot isn't a threat right now, like if he's not a big shooting threat, you can collapse even more onto Bo Horvat. Like, the logic of Horvat being sort of their primary goal scorer, he needs to be the sort of release valve. That if that's your primary option, I think it's easier to take away the middle of the ice than it is to take away the, you know, flanker shooter on that right side. Horvat should be the beneficiary of teams cheating on Pettersson, and right now anyway, I think we're going to see teams cheat on Horvat. So what will be interesting to see is how the Canucks can adjust to that, and if they can, in the event that Pettersson doesn't, you know, become Pettersson again in the very near future.
Great stuff, man. Got to let you go. Wish we could talk forever, but it's great catching up with you.
Man. Yeah. Likewise.
And I know you got a heavy podcast schedule today, so we're going to let you get to that. But always great, man. Let's do this again. We could do this again soon. Vancouver's going to be in Montreal pretty soon, so maybe we can have a return engagement here.
Sounds good. Thanks, gentlemen.
All right. Thanks a lot, Thomas.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
So Arpin, it's funny because the Canadians have been so good offensively so far this season. There are 24 goals that they've scored so far, put them first in the league after their first five games, which is completely unusual. We see guys at the top of the leaderboard, which is, I mean, something that I don't remember seeing in a long time.
No, it's bonkers. It's completely bonkers.
Yeah.
That they're leading the league right now. It's crazy.
What do you enjoy most about this beginning of season so far?
Well, I mean, we touched on it in the intro, is the fact that it's fun. This team's fun. And the thing is that, you know, and Thomas pointed to it, and he's exactly right. Like, this team is not playing at its peak level yet. Like, it still has a lot of things to clean up, but they're scoring so many goals. They're generating so many breakaways. And here's the thing, like, yeah. You know, like, I mean, like Drance mentioned it, how, you know, when he said that the Canadians aren't playing at their top level, but the Canucks were awful. Well, the Oilers were awful defensively against them. They gave up a whole bunch of breakaways, not shorthanded breakaways the way the Canucks have, but, or not that many of them at least, but they gave up a lot of breakaway opportunities. The Maple Leafs, the Canadians generated breakaway opportunities. It's at a certain point, you got to wonder where the blame lies there. Like, it's, and I have a theory on this, but this is what's making them fun, is that they can generate scoring opportunities in an instant. Like, they go from defense to offense And it's a grade A scoring chance in a matter of seconds. And I do have a theory on this. Like, you know, we've talked endlessly on this podcast. We've written about it endlessly on The Athletic that, you know, obviously this is a depth-based team and the benefits of that depth will start to manifest themselves in a more direct fashion or a more obvious fashion the further along we go in the season. I kind of think we're starting to already see it. Yeah. Only 5 games in, like, because you see it within games and you see it as these series go on, you know, I mean, it's like, it's kind of, you know, those breakdowns that give up those breakaways to the Canadians are their focus breakdowns, their concentration breakdowns. And you know, I think back to Morgan Riley after the first game of the season that was so entertaining and got everyone, the whole country was buzzing after watching that game in Toronto. He was asked, you know, how excited are you to face this team, you know, 9 more times this year, or 8 more times, or whatever it is. And Riley just kind of looked at the Zoom camera, was like, not really, not all that much. I'm not all that excited about it. Cause these games are hard, you know? And he was joking in a way, but I mean, this was right after the game. I mean, I think the Canadians exact a certain toll on their opponents that creates those mental lapses or breakdowns. Now we'll see if that remains true, but in theory, you know, assuming their depth doesn't get totally decimated by injuries, and we'll see what happens here with Armia and Byron. We're going to talk about Armia in a second, but I think that the depth of speed and the depth of talent on this team, not the high end talent, but having this many talented players, sort of induces these breakdowns from their opponents because it becomes a mental grind to constantly be under pressure. And I think that's what the Canadians are creating.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's when we say that the Canadians are not at their best yet, I think that the Dano line has not been dominating or at least visible the way they've been the past couple of years. I mean, Tatar has had his moments, but I mean, it's been rather discreet for Gallagher and especially Philippe Dano too. So, you know, a testimony of that depth is the fact that in a 7-3 blowout on Thursday night, Philippe Dano ended up playing less than 11 minutes. It's something that for a guy who's, you know, until otherwise is labeled as the number one center on that team, it's pretty striking. So, but you've got somebody to pick up the slack. The last couple of games in Vancouver, obviously, it's been Kotkaniemi, Armia, and Toffoli. Suzuki's been a standout, I think, constantly. I mean, he might have been a little bit quieter last night, but overall, it's a stellar beginning of the season for him.
He's been their best forward, I think.
Yeah,
from beginning to end, he's been their most consistent forward. Other than, yeah, he had a bit of a quiet game last night, but I think he's been their most consistent guy.
The imagination that he's showing, also the awareness, the 200 feet game, but it's odd because he keeps his line a threat in all shifts, but it. You know, I wrote about Jonathan Drouin having a good beginning of season, and I showed on different clips on The Athletic about to express my viewpoint. But the two games that followed, it didn't go that way. It didn't go in his favor at all. And Josh Anderson, I mean, I think that he got injured a little bit at some point. You could see that his skating stride, he got slower for maybe a game and a half. It seems to be picking up, and I'm sure he's going to be fine. And his kiss out is such a so enticing for the Montreal Canadiens because they have been missing that sort of weapon for years. But you look at that line, you look at the Kotkaniemi line, Dano, even Jake Evans. I mean, that fourth line has been very effective 5-on-5, and on the PK. Evans himself, I mean, he's been such a threat. He's been so much putting so much pressure on the opponent. You know, we've been talking about the fact that the Canadians wanted to have a more aggressive PK and delay the moment that the other team would set up in the zone. Well, Jake Evans is really good at doing that.
Yeah, and I think, yeah, he's gotten better with every game. I think Arturi Lehkonen's had an excellent start to the season. I've taken to watching him forecheck just because I saw some micro stats at one point about how often he creates pressure on the forecheck. And so I've last couple of games I've been watching him. And honestly, like, I would recommend to our listeners, watch him forecheck. It's honestly something to see. Like, he closes on the puck carrier so quickly and with such purpose. He's a very, very disruptive player, and I know he gets a lot of flack for you know, his finishing ability and all this stuff, and that he's never going to be a scorer. But it's time that people just appreciate this guy for what he is, and it's an extremely good 200-foot player, extremely good at puck retrieval, an extremely good skater, and a guy who doesn't necessarily hurt you in the flow of the offense. You know, maybe he won't score as many goals as his talent would suggest he should, but he does not impede his team from creating offense. In fact, it's the opposite. He contributes to his team contributing offense. And so having him on a fourth line, having a Paul Byron on a fourth line, it's such a luxury. And Claude mentioned it, you know, recently where, you know, if a player is not going, and let's be honest, Joel Armia before the last couple of games looked like a candidate for this.
Oh yeah.
You know, he's got Lehkonen and Byron sitting right there on the fourth line that he can plug in. And the line that they're put on will not miss a beat. It's not like they're adding a typical fourth liner. They're adding a guy who is legitimate top nine forward. So so that adds to the fun quotient, I think, just because I think a lot of teams throw their fourth line out there and you could be like, okay, let's just survive this shift until we can get back to the first or second line. The Canadiens don't, it's not like that with the fourth line.
Not anymore. You
see the opportunity. Not anymore. Yeah, not anymore. Absolutely. Like on this team, it's not. And the other fun aspect to the start of the season, probably the most fun, is discovering Alexander Romanov, is just seeing to what extent this kid is living up to everything the Canadians have said about him. You know, the superlative praise that he was being given by everyone, Rob Ramage, Claude Julien, Marc Bergevin, Trevor Timmins, list goes on and on. And to an extent, Luke Richardson especially, I mean, to an extent that I'd never really seen about a player who hadn't played a single game in the NHL, and he has come, I think, even better than advertised. I mean, listen, last night he had his first moment where you're like, oof, that's a rookie mistake. Like when Brandon Sutter turnstiled him pretty deftly on the way to a really nice goal, that was a rookie moment.
That cliche of saying the welcome to the NHL moment.
Welcome to the NHL moment, but it took him five games to have it. And, you know, five games of playing significant minutes in significant situations against significant opposition. He's been on the ice against Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, John Tavares, Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, Pettersson. And after facing all these guys, it's Brandon Sutter that provides his welcome to the NHL moment. So,
of course.
That guy that people like lose sleep because they have to face the next night. But yeah, he's been, I think, the biggest contributor to the fun aspect of it, because he was an unknown and he's basically been flawless since the start of the year.
And also it's the dynamic style of play also that is so, so enjoyable, and you can tell easily how he's going to become a fan favorite in no time. You know, the minute that the fans are allowed in the building, they're going to let him know, because it's, you know, I know that I've mentioned it in an article and I've heard plenty about it, those comparisons between him and PK Subban. They're not the same player. They have things that are very different one about the other, but I recognize the same sort of explosiveness on his skates, and the fact that the engine that's relentless, that is so enjoyable to watch. When you talk about the energy of youth, you know, the fact that the enthusiasm, that's something that really compels Montreal Canadiens fans. Novelty, pure talent, ingenuity, and the enthusiasm that comes with being, you know, young and audacious. And I think that that Romanov really encapsulates that very well right now. There'll be some bumps on the road along the way, but I think that he definitely is someone who's bringing the fun factor really high up. And he can make really a big difference on that blue line this year, because we saw that yesterday. A day after Chiarot and Weber had logged over 25 minutes, their minutes went down a little bit, and Romanov ended up at 21 minutes, 42 seconds, which is pretty impressive. I mean, only Weber played 1 second more than him. So he's trusted, he's relied upon, and it's really great to see. We mentioned it at the beginning of the show. We have a new voicemail that is available to our listeners. If you have questions to ask us and you want to hear your own voice on our podcast, we've got a voicemail. The phone number is 424-703-3859, 424-703-3859. And obviously we have also an email address where you can reach us. It's a bilingual email address, really easy to remember. It's Balado, BALADO, Habs Pod, Balado, Habs Pod at gmail.com. And every week we're going to dig into all the comments and questions that you've been that you've been sending us, and discussing a few of them. So don't hesitate. But until we receive a question from a listener, the question that everybody is going to ask themselves is, Yoel Armia, is he going to be okay? And what are they going to do to replace him? Arpin, why don't you answer that?
Oh, thank you. We got into the sort of the complicated mechanisms of the collective bargaining agreement today in our piece on The Athletic, our the debut of our weekly Canadians notebook, if you will. Just to mention to listeners, every Friday, Marc-Antoine and I will be having a notebook-style piece where we sort of gather tidbits of information throughout the week and sort of summarize what happened in the week and look ahead to what's coming for the Canadians. So look for that every Friday on The Athletic. Yoel Armia and Paul Byron getting injured in the same game is something that the Canadians were kind of dreading, in the sense that, you know, I think if it was just Yoel Armia, it would have been okay. If it was just Paul Byron, it would have been okay, because they have a Corey Perry, they have a Michael Frolik on the taxi squad, and they have the cap space to absorb one of them. But they don't have the cap space to absorb two of them. So there is some cap implications here. But I think in a more general sense, you know, to hear Julien say after Wednesday's game that the second half of that game was the best Armia had played all year, and then for Armia to come and start Thursday's game, right where he left off on Wednesday, and getting the first 4-point game of his career, and then getting blindsided by Tyler Myers and having a concussion, is the most unfortunate thing. Because if there's one top nine forward the Canadians had who was not looking great on a consistent basis up until Wednesday, it was Yoel Armia. And the one guy that I thought was a candidate to get bumped down to the fourth line was him, with either Byron or Lehkonen getting bumped up onto the Kotkaniemi line. Obviously now that they wouldn't have done that, but now they might be forced to do that. They are forced to do that, because it's clear that Armia is going to miss some time. So it's unfortunate, because he was finding his groove. And listen, I think NHL people always say bigger guys take more time to get going on a season. So that's why when I see a Joel Edmondson struggle out of the gate, when I see a Ben Chiarot not looking fantastic on certain nights, when I see Shea Weber even in the first period last night not looking very good, I always keep that in mind, that I've had several NHL scouts mention to me that, big guys, they take some time to figure it out, they'll be fine. So I think we saw Armia figuring it out, and he was a real threat. The dangle on his goal, on the backhand goal, it was gorgeous. I mean, just the hands and the instincts to be able to pull that off in tight quarters like that, which is what Armia does so well, showed that he was back and he was on his game. So this concussion could not come at a worse time for him.
I mean, Armia is a decent skater. He's an agile skater, probably not the fastest one, but a very agile skater. But what I've noticed is that with Kotkaniemi, who found another gear in terms of speed, but it seems as though he's a similar style of guy that won't necessarily use his explosiveness, you know, on every shift. They seem to have adjusted to the pace of Tyler Toffoli's game, so they've. Mm-hmm. They find a way to manage to skate and play at the same pace. And I remember that in his rookie season, when he ended up playing alongside Paul Byron, Kotkaniemi was actually concerned that Byron would be too fast for him. And that, you know, and that their cadence, their pace would not be a fit because of that, and because their style would be so different. And I felt as though Toffoli, Aramia, and Kotkaniemi, I found a beat, you know, their own beat to which they were playing, and they were effective because of that. And so it's unfortunate because you if you have to replace Aramia, and obviously they will because he suffered a concussion, so he's going to be out for a while. That mix necessarily will be different the next time around.
Yeah, but as you know, as mentioned, the Canadiens at least have the pieces to absorb it, and let's see what happens with Byron here, and let's see what happens with all the cap stuff that has to happen.
But there's one thing, though. There's one thing, Arpin, is there a possibility that instead of, because they cannot, you know, they cannot call up two guys, that they go 11-7, 11 forward, and they bring Vector Mete?
Yeah, it's possible. It's lineup. Absolutely possible. They might be forced to do it if they want to avoid all the kind of complicated and somewhat costly things that they would have to do in order to get a second forward in the lineup from a cap perspective. That's definitely an option. It does, however, severely hamper the way Claude Julien wants his team to play. I mean, he can't, you know, it's easy on a top heavy team to take a forward off the fourth line and add a seventh defenseman because the fourth line only plays 8 or 9 minutes anyway. When the fourth line is playing 12 to 14 minutes, that becomes a little bit more complicated. Do you give Victor Mete some forward shifts? Which they could do. I honestly think Victor Mete is probably the defenseman on the team that can handle it the best playing forward. But it's definitely an option, I would think. It's something that would allow them to avoid a lot of the cap issues that that calling up both Frolik and Perry would entail. So we'll find out. We're going to see on Saturday what they're going to do, but it's definitely a possibility.
It's a patch for one day, but starting next
week. Yeah, well, against... it really depends on how long Aramia and or Byron are out. And if they're out legitimately long-term, then long-term injured reserve becomes a serious possibility, at which point there's a whole bunch of things that have to happen that we're not going to get into here that we got into a little bit in the piece if you want to read that. But long-term injured reserve is not a simple mechanism by any stretch of the imagination in the collective bargaining agreement. And any team would prefer avoiding using that resource if they can. So, yeah, I think it's actually a very good point. I think they could avoid it by using Mete as a seventh defenseman / fourth line winger. But we'll see.
Yeah.
So let's debut the Heritage Minute, Marc-Antoine, just to finish up here. So as Marc-Antoine mentioned off the top of the show, every week we're going to look around the Canadian division. I refuse to call it the North division, the Canadian division, and identify a storyline that jumped out to us. So Marc-Antoine, what you got for us this week?
Well, I was debating if I would go and rant on the umlaut, that punctuation sign on Tim Stützle. Tim Stützle's name, and it's been creating such a stir and such a debate. And when you see on the NHL's official sheets that they cannot spell Lafreniere with an accent, and instead it's like, I think it's a question mark that replaces the accent grave. You realize that everything in this sport is geared towards making it easy for the English majority. But anyway, this
having it be a question mark is just so perfectly symbolic, actually, of how the NHL, despite all their foreign language sites, the question mark is a perfect thing to replace the umlaut and the accent grave.
Yeah.
As far as how the NHL views, anyhow.
Yeah. Absolutely. I'm going to keep tabs on what's going on in Winnipeg and their blue line. They just called up Ville Heinola to play his first game of the season last night. They've got a bunch of young defensemen, Dylan Sandberg, Logan Stanley, guys like that. And it's been a team that had that has had so many, such a turnover on defense the last few years. They lost many veterans, Ben Sherrod being one of them, Tyler Myers, who administered that hit on Armia, being another. And they've been in a flux since then. And I think that it puts them in a very vulnerable position, not only against the Canadiens, but every other team in that division. So they're full of question marks on defense, but they stuck around those young guys, and Ainola is chief among them, and I think that it's going to be interesting to see if that youth movement, if they're decided. I know that, you know, there are some injuries that come in the way. Dylan DeMello is not there, whatnot, but if they find ways to include their youngsters and those guys bring their blue line to another level, then maybe we might see the Winnipeg Jets being higher up in the standings that most people expected they will. So that's something that I'll keep an eye on. How about you?
Yeah, I agree. I will keep an eye on that. I'm higher on the Jets than most people are, I think. I think I really like their mix. The defense is an issue, though, so that's why I think your point is so valid. And to me, it's really a defensive conscience seemingly arriving in Toronto and Edmonton at the same time on the same night. To me, it was funny to watch to what extent the country was freaking out that first Maple Leafs Oilers matchup or that first McDavid versus Matthews matchup was such a snooze fest, you know? And then for the Canadians and Canucks to follow that up with probably the most entertaining game of the season so far was just hilarious to me. And I really loved the quote from Dave Tippett where he said, "All offseason, all anyone wanted to talk about was how Toronto and Edmonton needed to learn how to defend. So Toronto and Edmonton learn how to defend, and everyone's freaking out about it." I'm paraphrasing. That's not exactly what he said. That's basically what he said.
Yeah.
And why I find it interesting is that what does exist in both Toronto and Edmonton is a realization and an acknowledgement that their teams are unaware or unable to play a style that is effective in the playoffs. The Maple Leafs have not made it past one round of the playoffs. They didn't even make it into the playoffs technically last season, but they have not made it past the first round over the course of these core 4 years with Matthews and Marner and Nylander and Riley. It's been an issue, and it's something that the offseason was very much geared towards. Joe Thornton is part of the solution to that, even though he's hurt right now. Wayne Simmonds was part of the solution to that. Zach Bogosian was part of the solution to that. So there was an acknowledgement there. And in Edmonton, there's a similar acknowledgement. I don't think they had quite the offseason to address it to the same extent. But that was the effort in the offseason, was to get them deeper, to make them a little more difficult to play against. So watching these two teams who have this as their primary weakness go head to head and show to what extent they can play a playoff style, boring style, if you want to call it, but whatever, play a defensively sound game and butt heads in that way was really telling to me. You know, I think both those teams have prioritized changing their identity a little bit. And I think we saw that manifested against each other in what was the highest profile game of the year. It was the first Canadian division game that was broadcast on NBC Sports Network. It was broadcast nationally in the United States because of the McDavid versus Matthews matchup. It was such a sexy game that everyone circled on their calendar. And for the two teams to come out and play like that, like literally put everyone to sleep watching it, didn't do the game a big favor in the sense of promoting it. And
no, and NBC must exposure. Have thought, NBC yeah. must have thought, you know, thanks, Canada.
Yeah, exactly. Like this is, we finally pay attention to you and this is what you give us. But it's, I think it is telling, I think we're going to see this storyline emerge, or not emerge, it's already emerged, but like continue to simmer in Toronto and Edmonton throughout the season. It's going to be interesting to watch their evolution, or if they're able to evolve, and if this is indicative of an evolution to come for both those teams.
Yeah, and the Canadians will be probably well positioned because of, you know, their defense reflex or you know, second nature. That you know, when it comes crunch time, maybe that's going to be in their favor. So it's going to be something to look forward to. We're very, very, you know, excited about the upcoming season. I hope that you can all feel it. We're excited that you're here for the ride with us. So thanks for listening to The Athletic Support. If you have not subscribed to The Athletic yet, please do so. You can save on your subscription by going to theathletic.com/athletic support. Theathletic.com/athletic support. There's always some sort of rebate going on to make you save on your on the first year of your subscription. So you can read not only Arpin's article, not only mine, but also all the network, Thomas Durant's articles, and a lot more writers from around the NHL. So thanks a lot for being with us today. Thanks a lot, Arpin, and we'll talk to you next week for Le Super Athletic in French.